thanks for being here, group. This is so intimate and tiny, and it's great. Men and women, we have as many men as we do women this year, which is great. I'm Emily Dale. I am joined by three women who are wonderful. I've gotten to know them and spend some time with them over the past several weeks, and I'm excited for what's in store. As a part of this workshop, you get an extra book. You Have a Calling, Finding Your Vocation in the True, Good, and Beautiful. They are on the back table. Amy has them back there. And it is a great book. It is not written for women, so it's relevant to everybody. But it is what we use to kind of outline our discussion today. I'm going to let everybody give their 10-second intro, and then we'll get going.
I'm Whitney Harrison. I'm a business owner. I'm a financial planner. I run a practice here called Capital Stewardship Partners in Nashville. I'm originally from Minneapolis, Minnesota. My husband came to me 6 years ago and said, I think the Lord is calling us to move to Franklin, Tennessee. And I said, where is Frankfort, Tennessee? That sounds terrible. Turns out it's beautiful. 6 months later, we picked up and left and never looked back, and we loved it.
I am Lauren Harris. I am an experiential graphic designer. I started in architecture. My husband and I are both architects. About 10 years ago, I sidestepped that and started in a related industry doing signage and wayfinding and branded environments. And I own a business. I started in 2019. At the end of 2019, right before the pandemic, and then we found out we were pregnant a month later, and then the world shut down. So business ownership, motherhood, and pivoting have kind of all gone hand in hand for me.
I'm Teresa Sparks, and I have been in healthcare for the past 30 years as a C-suite executive, primarily in as the CFO. And today I serve on as an independent board member for public and private equity-backed companies. I'm a mom. I'm a grandma. I'm a native Nashvillian, which, I'm the unicorn maybe of the bunch. But, so thrilled to be here.
Teresa also owns and runs a farm.
We do, yeah. Yes.
And I'm a Nashville native, too.
Okay.
We're the unicorns
together.
That's right.
We did talk about that.
Yeah. Okay, so as we jump in, I'm going to read just a little clip from this book that has kind of led discussions for our team. The work of wisdom described in Proverbs 31 is not only varied, but also integrated into a holistic and well-rounded life. There is no division between public and private or between sacred and secular. Wisdom's work takes place in the marketplace and in the home. Her work blesses the community and her family alike. Most importantly, she serves the Lord in it all. Her good work will bring her praise at the city gate. This description is one all of us should aspire to in pursuing the good, true, and beautiful in our work. So that is what we're talking about. Specifically for women, how we integrate ordinary work with our vocations. So to get started, I want to hear how each of you define your vocation, your original true calling, and what that means to you. Whitney's going to go first. Okay, somebody else go.
I'll go last.
I think this is one of those Sunday school questions of like, the answer is Jesus, but obviously it is. When we are rooted in our understanding that our identity is found in Christ, that informs all of our other callings. And I think one thing that as we've been preparing for this and I've been thinking about these questions is how that looks. It's going to be different for all of us, the way that informs our contexts and our sort of sub-callings is going to look different, but obviously, that first calling is we are image bearers of God through our work.
Side question, that is for men and women. How do you see that specifically for women? Do you have any, is there any differentiating there for women? I didn't write that one down. So. Good luck.
I would say yes. I think we are created so uniquely. One of the speeches I give often is the top 10 things I've learned as a female in business. And one of those is, on the heels of be authentic, is be female. We have intuition that God gave us. We can walk into a room and there are of kids. There may be five kids, and we can walk into that room. We can know exactly who just hit whom, who's pulled the other's hair, who's told on the other. You know, we can discern. And the boardroom's not a lot different. So I can walk into the boardroom and get a pretty good understanding of who, you know, who's, what's going on. I can read the room. And I think that's a female, you know, innate. So I don't know if that's exactly where we were headed with that, but
yeah, I mean,
just a thought.
It's great. It leads to kind of our next question, unless, Whitney, you want to add anything to our first original calling? Yeah. Okay. How do you understand calling when the demands of work and family feel genuinely in tension? And so with the gift of intuition, I think there's also a weight and responsibility to balancing all the things. And on the tail of that, one of the things we also have talked a lot about is addressing the myths of the world with truth. So maybe the myth that we can do it all, we've got it, we as women should be able to do all the things.
I'll take that one.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting as I've been preparing for this. I kept praying. I was like, okay, God, what's the biblical lesson and what's the narrative and how do we... And he just kept saying, be vulnerable. Like just as the Christian walk, we're supposed to look, especially as women, right, to look like we have it all together and to have our hair done and our nails done and all the things and walk into a room and blow everybody away and run our businesses and breastfeed our babies and do all the things. And I'm in this really interesting season where if you would have asked me 10 years ago, what is my calling? I would have said, well, my outward calling and my inward calling have to match. And my outward calling is what God calls me to do for business, and my inward calling is the gifts that he has given me. And when they're in alignment and I'm flourishing, and for me, that is financial planning, which I never thought would be the answer. I wanted to be a veterinarian. Like, God's got me way outside, right? His plans are different. But in this season, I feel like foundationally, he is, as we talk about, and on our call, we talked about balance, we talked about cadence, we talked about, I don't believe in balance, I believe in recalibrating to your season. I don't think we're called to do it all. I don't think we can do it all. I think we need God in a very, very intimate way on a daily basis. And he's teaching me that as personally he has been removing in my life everything that I thought foundationally I had. It's crumbling so that he can rebuild it. So I moved to Nashville 5 years ago. I had run a financial planning practice on my own for 14 years, and I recently partnered with now 9 other men. So I had this thing that I was in control of, and then you bring 9 other people into it, and it's like a wild ride, and it is so hard. I feel like it crumbled, and I'm rebuilding something new. I became a mom in the last 23 months. I have a 23-month-old, and I have a 4-month-old at home. Yeah, we've got 2 under 2. So like my body physically, right, like crumbled and I'm rebuilding it. Women are amazing. Yes. My marriage, I married a loving, godly, wonderful man. And we've been on this adventure together. When I was pregnant with Benjamin, my last baby, I was 9 months pregnant. Benjamin came 8 days late. He just would not come and would not come and would not come. And people kept asking, they're like, is there a spiritual component to this? And I was like, how do you know? I'm sorry this is going to be long-winded, but... And I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was like violently shaking. I had a trauma response. I don't have trauma. I've never had a trauma response. And I finally looked at my husband. My husband has an interesting story. He's got some trauma in his story. And I said, and about every quarter, the Holy Spirit would work on me. And I just knew there was more to my husband's story. And he was like, I'd be like, John, are you sure? Are you sure there isn't more that I don't know about you? Are you sure there isn't more to your story? He'd be like, no. Finally, I woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, tell me. Tell me what it is. I am done. I'm done with the hiding. I'm done with whatever's happening. Tell me. I love you too much. I'm not going to do this anymore. And it all came out. His story of, now all this happened prior to our marriage, prior to us ever meeting each other, but he had childhood trauma that happened that he wasn't ready to share with me or the world. And because of that, he had some sexual history that he lied about to me. And he, again, before we were ever together, and he had some family of origin stuff that he lied about because he didn't want me to feel shame about his family. And just all these things that I feel like foundationally, I have deeply loved this person for 10 years. And I'm like, did I know you? And that betrayal was so, like, deeply hard. Because he's such a good man. He's such a good man of God. And I'm like, you were afraid. And to have the foundation of, my dad has Alzheimer's, my parents, I'm learning my relationship with my parents, I'm like, did I actually grow up in a Christian household? And all this has come up in the last 12 months for me. So God is just ripping apart, and I'm having to rebuild, and the calling part of all of this, like, what are we called to? I'm called to be a great wife and love my husband through this season. I'm called to give grace like I was first given grace. If you want to talk about learning about grace, marriage, relationship. I am called to be an amazing business owner and to step into that room and execute for my clients' financial plans, regardless of the stuff that's going on in my own life. I can't drop that ball. That's a glass ball. That shatters. That is a failure that is not allowed. I am called to be a great mother to my sweet babies that are up every 90 minutes because they have the flu over and over and over and over again. And so right now, calling for me is true dependency. It's the renewing of your mind daily on the Lord. I have never understood that Bible verse until right now. And what God does through that is absolutely unbelievable. Like the joy I have and the peace I have and the execution I have amidst the crumbling, if you want it, it's there for you, but you got to find it in God. It is not in me, it is in Him. And it is about truth and vulnerability and acceptance and tools along the way that God gives us. That was the longest winded answer, but
thank you for being vulnerable.
Yeah.
As you navigate life, as each of us navigates life, I think we are often defined just as much by the things we say yes to as the things that we say no to. That's really hard for me because I'm an over-yeser. My husband's sitting right there. He could tell you. As we change through the seasons, aren't reliant on ourselves to do it all, I would love to hear how saying no, how some practical ways of saying no and balancing, but you hate that word.
Recalibrating
how we say no to do good and beautiful work in all of our calling. When do you want to take that one?
Sure. Yes. I also think that their balance is not achievable. First of all, I'm more seasoned in my career, and I have adult children. And now I have grandchildren. And I look back on this attempt to balance throughout my career and realize that there were days where, like, I would just get an A-plus at work. And if you're on a scorecard and I'd get an I felt like at home, and then it would be the other way around, and
or just like a D across the board.
Then I got to the end of raising kids, and we had about 20 kids that grew up in our home. Like, it was crazy, and I realized that it was crazy, it was messy, and that I could not be all things. And so part of that not being all things was, I'm a constant yes sayer as well. But just being very practical and maybe kind of diverting from, my walk and just talking about that, which I really just landed on the fact that in a lot of different things, and there's a lot of, my story is very long and has points where I had to just say, okay, is the Lord good or is he not? After 6 miscarriages, after a promise of a large family, which the Lord gave me just in a different way. But I had to say, is the Lord good? Yes or no? And just quickly, 13 years ago, I said, when I asked him this, I said, okay, I'm just going to read the Bible from front to beginning to end. I've never done that. I'm just going to read it. And if you're good, then at the end, maybe I'll know that. Well, shockingly, at the end, obviously through this, he did reveal to me his goodness. And I have read the Bible through beginning to end every year for the past 13 years because it's my lifeline. I'm never going to say no to that. I'm always going to say yes to that because I can't live without it. And people say, oh my gosh, that's amazing. You've read the Bible for 13 years, all the way through every year. Well, if I told you I ate every day for 13 years every day, you're not going to be that impressed. And to me, it's the same thing. It is something I'm not going to say no to. And it is because it's my lifeline. It's my daily bread. But on a practical note, I have a housekeeper. I have said no to the fact that I can't do it all, and I like a peaceful, clean home. So just a little practical thing where I'm like, you know what, something that is worth, I can say no to going out to eat, but I'm going to say yes to keeping my house clean. That's just a little practical.
That's actually something that kind of kept coming up as what can we, two things, what can we delegate as women? And then what do we believe about our ordinary work, whether that is at our home or that is the spreadsheet or that is doing payroll? There is an element of ordinary work to our paid jobs and our home jobs. And so I'm curious, maybe Lauren, if you want to speak to ordinary work.
Yeah, when we first talked about this question on our call, delegation was one of the first things that came up. But as I've been thinking about it more and more, first, I have two girls, they're 2 and 5, and the way that they feel about ordinary work is inspiring to me. Like, I wish I felt this way about doing the dishes, or they fight over who gets the longest duster so that they can reach up and dust. They fight about the wet wipes. They ask almost every night, is there something that we can help with, especially our 5-year-old? Is there something we can do to prepare the meal? Is there something that they can, like, take part in? And I'm not trying to downplay that, doing the dishes may not be your favorite part of your day. But I do think that there's something about, there is an excitement to tending to, like, we have agency over the things that are in our care. We have agency over caring for the people in our lives, over caring for our space. God has given us, like, bodies and energy and just the gift of movement to be able to tend to these things. And I think I like that word more too, just infusing it with more meaning. But another part of this, I just remember when my husband and I first started coming to Grace, we went to a Sunday school class that David Atchison was leading on faith and work. This is not a new topic for him. And it was early on in my career as well. And I think it's the first time I remember someone posing the question, is work a product of the fall? And I was honestly like, oh, yes, maybe. Like, but no, toil is a product of the fall. Work was there in the garden. Naming the animals, like we can just go back to creation and see that work and his good plan for giving us the gift of work was there from the beginning. So anyway, I think, you know, regardless of how much you delegate, ordinary work will be a part of our day, every day. And just, I think, praying through the reframing of, Lord, what are you doing in these moments of stillness after I put my kids to bed and I'm doing the dishes and maybe it's a little bit quieter? Like, it's just, there are moments in ordinary work that I have felt the Lord speaking to me in a different way than I wouldn't have otherwise had I been distracted or just intensely focused on what I consider my career.
That's good. Thank you. You said work is a gift. What would you say, any of you, to someone who may be in a job that doesn't feel like a gift, maybe in a career that they would not consider something that they're passionate about, or they're paying the bills, they're meeting a need? There is a myth that we should do everything we can to follow our passion, follow what lights your soul on fire, follow your goals. And so what do you see the truth? Where is the truth in that? Are we built to follow our passion only?
No.
I had a feeling you were going
to
say that.
I just want to go back to feeling like we have to do everything. No is a complete sentence. And I believe that priorities create capacity. And if you have a few really great priorities, it allows you to reframe your thinking and focus on what the Lord wants you to. And the devil is great at distracting us, right? That's all he wants to do. It's like at the end of the day, if we're in alignment with God's priorities and we can say no to everything else. I was telling the ladies on the call, we were laughing about this, that like I hate going out to lunch. I'm like, this is the biggest waste of time. Now, other people are like great relationship builders. My husband goes out to lunch with people all the time and he like, it's like abundant and lovely. And I'm like so mad. If you ask me out to lunch, I'm like, no, you're wasting my time. So anyways, do what the Lord calls you to do and the rest, don't worry about it. Priorities, right? Like have your own priorities with
Lauren
God.
Lauren and I are like, oh, lunch, I know, we love lunch.
And yeah, and they were like, we love it. So like, you know what? God made us all different, right? What was the question?
I don't know.
Well, I would
passion
summarize. Oh. Yeah, to say it's the passion.
Yeah.
And I would summarize a little bit what you said. It's seek first the kingdom.
Yes.
So you don't like your job? Seek first the kingdom. Get in the word. You don't feel like you're passionate about something you're not doing? Seek first the kingdom. Get in the word. Like, seek first the kingdom. That's the priority. That's the overarching theme. And if you don't like where you're at, the word of God changes everything.
And I think it starts to change and transform you so that you can view things differently and make different choices.
Right.
And when you're filled with the fruits of the Spirit, you walk into a non-joyful job and you bring joy. And you walk into changing diapers. I keep thinking about this. I'm like, they don't talk about, as we think about the disciples and everybody and traveling over the world, I'm like, how many diapers were changed? Probably a lot. They're like, people were being born and there were babies and all the things, right? Like, I'm in the season of this. But we don't talk about that. But that's still, it's all important work. And it all, as we think about the mundane and we think about the things that don't bring us joy, why do they not bring us joy? Is it the task? Is it us? Like, where is the Lord's calling in all of this? I think is important. He calls you for a season or a reason. Are you in that job? Are you in that relationship? Are you in that piece of your life? What is he doing and what is he teaching? Because I believe that he will use it if you allow him to and you listen to him. I also think we can miss it. I think that we can stay too long. We can do things the wrong way. Like, if you're not attuned to your creator, you can go astray. And I think, well, I won't go down to what I think, but that's enough said. Enough said.
Good. Anything else on that? Increased responsibility often reveals what we truly rely on. When pressure rises in your work, what do you find yourself depending on? Control, competence, approval, faith, something else?
I think for me, you side-eyed me at control, and it's because you, well, maybe I just felt your eyes, like.
No, Lauren, she did.
Lauren's control.
It's because she loved what you said in our call, that's why.
You guys may have to remind me if I don't speak to it, but I think if I start just in focusing on, I am a natural problem solver. I also am a crazy time blocker with our family's calendar and my work calendar. I can see my entire week and how it is hypothetically going to play out. It never does. But if I start with what I can do to, I just try to problem solve. I try to create more margin. I decommit to things. I shift things around. And that may be the right thing to do. But if I start with going to God and saying, hey, this is what's going on this week, just praying about it. And then, yeah, and go to the Word. And then use that lens to refresh my heart and asking for wisdom and discernment and how to shift things around if that's necessary. I mean, that you guys know that that's the way to come about it. It's not grasping for control, which is not going to work anyway.
I've leaned on the verse, and I can't quote it right this moment, but that says, my times are in your hands. And years ago, I took that to mean my calendar, my schedule. Because, and then moving into what I do now, it's very dependent upon availability and do you have enough capacity? I'm asked that every day. Do you have enough capacity? I just laugh for a lot of reasons. But, you know, when I look out at my schedule and my calendar, I do recommit it to the Lord and lean on that my times are in His hand. And He orchestrates things that I'll look at it and think, there's no way this can all happen. And then I really just, like, I can picture myself like Hezekiah, like laying it on the altar, like my plan, you know, my planner, my calendar, and just laying it on the altar and saying, Lord, this is yours.
So. I think for me, it used to be about prioritizing what needed to get done next. And now it's about prioritizing relationships. And it's amazing what God does when you prioritize relationships and when I just give up the schedule and the control. Now, I'm still a very scheduled human, but sometimes God will redirect me in my day. And as I've poured into my relationships, I just have had, even the last 2 days, I have had the most fascinating conversations with clients. I'm a financial planner. We don't talk about faith all the time, but sometimes we do. And I have two long-term relationships. These people have probably been clients for, one of them, 10 years, the other one, 8 years. Both of them happen to be in same-sex relationships, so I've kind of, like, not really brought my faith to the table originally. I have had in the last 2 days the most biblical conversations with these people because of the relational equity of what we have built and just being present, and then being able to speak truth to people that, in this society, people may lean out of those conversations versus lean in. And it was so well received and so heard and so, like, it was so fun. It was so fun. Also, somebody asked me about tithing, and just watching the Lord multiply in the world of finance has been amazing. So I think when you are open-handed, surrendered versus striving, I've learned how biblically that really allows you to flourish.
Obviously, there are a lot of calendar girls up here. But speaking of calendars, I would love to talk about rest. There are calendar girls, and there's a lot of success between the three of you. Where does rest, has rest always factored into your life? Where does it now, if it does?
I don't sleep, so no.
My husband says that rest is often stress for me. So he loves to point that out.
That's so harsh.
Yeah, I know. It's a good thing we've been married for 38 years. I have really been intentional about recommitting the Sabbath because I think, my life was changed by recommitting to the Sabbath. I think the world will be changed if we recommit to the Sabbath. And so it started out just small. Like, I'm a financial person as well, so every day I'm checking, oh, what did this do? What did that do? And looking up, bank accounts or investment accounts, I don't know, whatever. And that's one thing that I said, okay, I'm not going to do that on the Sabbath. And not that I'm not completely there at all, but I've just started little things. I'll take social media apps off my phone. And I'm not going to do that on the Sabbath, because it really trying to make that an intentional time of just rest. And what that rest looks like for me is like I have to be moving, so I have to take a walk what is it that I need to take a rest from and a Sabbath from, and just being intentional about some of those specifics. So just a thought.
I'm actually great at rest. I love to say no, and I love to rest, and I think it's so important, but it's taken practice. So for all of you that are like, go, 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 you can start to say no, 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 no. You just need to practice, 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 and ask God to reveal, look at your calendar and ask him to reveal where you should start, because sometimes it's overwhelming to say, well, I want to be this person, but I'm so far away and I don't know how to do it. God will lead you and be so gentle in that, and he will reward you in it. And so I just want to encourage you. And I want to encourage you, when you start to say no to things that seem a little bit easier, you can start to say no to things that are really hard. And I think it's unbelievably healthy for us as people. I also have zero social media, and it's the best.
Yeah, that's good. That leads us to our last question before a little bit of Q&A. If faith and work is a new concept for me. I grew up in the church, but I did not grow up around women who were working, and so this was all very new for me. Whether it's new for people that are in here, what is one thing you want to leave these women and men with, just to encourage, if it's a new thought, if it's not a new thought, how do you leave a bit of encouragement?
Yeah, I think when I was considering a version of this question of what's one thing that you would say, or I think it was what's one thing that you wish that you had learned sooner. Mine, I am confident that we have all known since childhood, because it's something that I can remember teachers saying, but I wish that I had let the practical, just like my heart had learned this sooner, of just stop looking around. And it's so simple, but the application of it is just really has served me well as I've started practicing this more of, as a working woman, as a working Christian woman, as a working Christian mother, there's just so much that you can compare yourself to, and everybody's context is just different, and God is a master teacher. I can remember talking about this in community group at Grace one time, but just remembering that God is the master teacher. He has you where you are for a reason. He has structured your day, your season of life, the people in it, your family, to teach you just what you need to learn. And so if someone else steps into my shoes and walks through tomorrow in my life, they're going to take different things from it. Like, they're going to learn and see different things than I would see. And so God has structured my tomorrow intentionally to teach me something, to sanctify me, to be present for my family, to serve, to help others. So I just think what Whitney is doing tomorrow versus Teresa, we can encourage one another and be confident in our own calling, in our own context. And those are not mutually exclusive. Like, we don't have to look at someone else and think, oh, well, maybe I should be doing that. We can just have confidence in God has us where we are in this season for a reason.
I love that. Thanks.
Sure. Yeah, I would encourage that as well. There's, I think it's Psalm 73 when it, Asaph, I think is who wrote that. When you're up here, you kind of forget something you've read every day.
For 13 years. You've read it every day for 13 years.
But it says, it's all about comparison. It's like, you know, it's like it's written for today. It's like, oh, look at them. They're so beautiful. They're so wealthy. They're this, they're that. It's almost like they're describing, you know, Hollywood today, and they don't have any problems. And then it says, you know, it's such a comparison until I stepped into the presence of the Lord. And when I stepped into the presence of the Lord, I know He's all I need. And so I have just that learning that very early. Of comparison leads, compare despair. Mm-hmm. Compare leads to, comparison leads to despair. Mm-hmm. Compare and despair. I mean, nothing, my kids, if they were here, my adult children, they would go, I know, Mama, nothing good comes from comparison. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's right. And what else? Stay in the Word. I know. So now that I have adult children, it's like they're repeating these things to me, but they've heard it for many years. So I would encourage that as well. That's a great one.
Thanks, Teresa.
My encouragement would be, you were made for hard things. And to do things you've never done before, you have to do things you've never done before. Like, you were called to grow and evolve. And my favorite Bible verse is from the book of James, and it says, consider it pure joy. Pure joy when you face trials of many kinds, for the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And let perseverance finish its work in you so that you are mature and complete, lacking nothing. Right? Like, God wants you to mature so you're ready for heaven. That's what we're doing. Of course He's going to allow you to grow. Growth is hard. Let me tell you, my two-year-old is, I think he's having growth pains in his legs. Can that happen?
Absolutely.
Okay, I was going to look it up, but I'll also ask for wisdom absolutely from the people that have been through it before.
We rub Vicks Vapor Rub all, my husband rubs Vicks Vapor Rub on Naomi's legs every night.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. These are things He'll that I need you. To know. He I'm knows. Like, okay, great. Also, my nanny made this homemade cream for my little ones, like Vicks. It was like a Vicks Vapor Rub. I thought it was diaper cream.
Oh, no.
Consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. Anyway, so that's my encouragement, is you were made for hard things.
Thank you. Any parting words before we do our Q&A time? Okay. Thank you, guys, each of you. Q&A time. Otherwise, I'll just keep asking them questions because I have nine.
Let's talk.
Oh, can we ask questions?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Please. For the Sabbath and, like, thinking through how, like, I am a go. So how are you intentionally, like, asking those questions of what is considered rest, Lord? Like, is the walk, is the organization turning your attention inward when 5 days a week you're working, doing other things? My rest is something I'm
doing,
but is that not rest?
I think about, we're on the topic of Sabbath in our house a lot right now as well, and I think about the ruthless elimination of hurry. Are you familiar with that book? one lens or like framework that he gives towards thinking about like the application of the Sabbath in your house is it rest or is it worship? And he gives all these examples of how his family thinks about it. And as a like, I just have a word of caution there of like, pray through and ask God to tell you what that is for your family, because that can look different. That has been helpful for me. Is it rest or is it worship? And if not, I'm going to save it for the next day.
That's good. For me, it was just more about intentionality. So when I was intentional about one thing to honor the Sabbath, then just started, the Lord started honoring that and speaking to me about, this is the posture I want your heart in today. But it started with, like, okay, I'm going to be intentional about one thing that I'm going to put aside and do that six days a week, but not on the Sabbath. And then it just started unfolding, and it was beautiful. I think it's just about intentionality.
I think rest doesn't always have to be stillness or asleep.
Yeah.
But like what you're saying, Teresa, it's like, rest could be preparing a meal and inviting the family over.
Yeah.
Because you said no to everything else that you could do that day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, like you're intentional, and that can bring a lot of healing and energy and deep breaths. I mean, I don't think rest has to be just, meditation.
I think it's also, where are you working from a place of?
Right.
Are you working from a place of rest and abundance, or are you working from a place of burnout?
Yes.
Well, if you feel like you're burnt out all the time, then you're probably not resting well.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions?
So we talked about delegation. I've learned a new word, which is the multiplier effect. So instead of delegating, which is kind of assigning tasks, maybe you're dictating, it's how God's created me, you, all uniquely, but you can't be everywhere at all times. How can you multiply? How do you see others soar? Give them the opportunity to be stretched, to do new things, to do hard things that you could do it, you just don't have the time to do it. So it's like a multiplier effect, maybe a little more positive, less dictatorial.
I think especially as women,
yeah,
like we have to delegate. And I really believe that I think we've changed delegation. Like, this was meant to be done in community.
Right.
It's just asking the community to speaking your needs. Like, speak your needs.
And live, unless you're like me, you live with all of your people. And so by default, it is community. Yes, usually it just happens, the kids and the grandkids. But yes, community is so important. But I like that multiplier, because as women, we do have to multiply everything. All of our efforts have to be multiplied.
And when you delegate, you have to be brave. If someone doesn't do it the way that you would do it, you have to be able to have courage and step into that and say, let me give you some feedback. Are you open to feedback? Great, first question. And in the United States, we often will give a compliment. We'll say, you're doing great, and this is amazing, but. Whereas it should really be the opposite.
Especially in the South.
Yeah. And we should say, hey, are you open to some feedback? When you do the dishes, please load from the back versus the front so that we can get more in the dishwasher. But I really appreciate the work that you do. Versus, I really appreciate the work that you do, but could you load from the... don't be afraid to step into the gap of the hard and be able to give some feedback versus giving up. Because a lot of times I think when we delegate, someone doesn't do it the way we want, and then we take it back as women, and there's more on our plate. It's like, no, lean into people and help them learn. We're here to help each other grow and evolve.
And I'm the least wise up here, but on the other side of that coin is... being okay if it doesn't get done the way I want it to get done. Like,
why?
Not because,
because he lives with me and because we do it differently, but I'm not right. I'm not always right, just because it's the way I want it done. So for me, it's even being able to say, so-and-so is going to load the dishwasher, and it might look different than, well, let's just be glad so-and-so is doing the dishwasher, because I might not, but that we can do it differently, and I have to trust that I don't know everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Any? Yes.
No, I think as women, what does that look like for your relationship with your husband? Because I know, like, just in our marriage, like, if I start pointing out everything that's, like, not how I, like, that festers inside me, and it just changes me, versus just letting things go and just be like, she's who she is. Like, this is nonsense. It doesn't have to be this way. But how do you find that kind of approach in your, even in your marriage?
Well, I have been married for a very long time, so 38 years, and I feel like we're just, every day, we kind of use your word, we recalibrate, but it's a beautiful thing that when we're seeking to serve one another, and he knows what brings me peace, and I know what brings him peace, you know, we're seeking to, so he's cleaning on, he's not leaving stuff on the counter, or, you know, but it's just this give and take, and we still recalibrate after 38 years.
I love that. I am saying this, if I were more mindful of what brought my husband peace, there are things I would do differently in my day, 100%. I think we have one more question. Yeah, and then imagine if we both did that. I think we have one more question.
Well, you brought burnout earlier. What's your quick answer to alleviating burnout, if there is a quick answer?
Vacation. I have learned that vacation looks different in my season, and I have learned to prioritize rest. Otherwise, I know I will burn out. And I know when I start to burn out, I need to take time. So it might be I'm going to schedule some time and have a babysitter. It might look like a date night tonight. It might look like something last minute. It might look like saying no to a family trip. But a change of pace and a change of place provides a change of perspective. And I think we often don't give ourselves the grace because we say, well, we have to do all this and we have to. No. If you're running from a place of burnout, it's all going to be significantly less than what God called it to be anyways.
I think a short answer to that is that I think all the topics we've been talking about feed into whether or not you, like, is the current path that you're on, are you destined for burnout? Are you overcommitted? Are you saying no to things? But I have recently, just very practically, started reading a book called Burnout, and the first chapter, I feel like, is the moneymaker. She, like, didn't make any bones about it. She just put it all in the first. And it's the science behind metabolizing your stress, which I didn't think we would be talking about today. But just stress is ever present. Even if we can, like, check all the perfect boxes around not overcommitting, there's still, like, just unknown things about your day that are unanticipated. And I think so. You cannot eliminate stress, but you can manage the stressor, and you can metabolize your stress. So she has, if you wanted to look into it, there's several different ways, but, like, moving your body, a 20-second hug, being creative, like several of the things that we've already talked about in some of the sessions today. I don't know, that was a new concept for me, and it has been more convincing, of you don't have to go on an hour-long run. You just have to, like, be present and realize, like, am I just holding this stress, or can I find a way to let it go?
I also want to encourage people, you have to do the work to get better, and the work is hard. But again, like, you were made for hard things, and whether it is, like, I
in a season of therapy, neurofeedback, EMDR, QNRT, freedom prayer, all the stuff, but I have to pull myself off the wheel of life, which is a period of rest. Like, if you want to become the best version of what God created you to be, it's not working on the outside. It's also working on the inside. And that is really hard, but some of the most fruitful work that we can do. I think part of that too is, you know, you asked how you do it with your partner. It's like communication with your spouse. When we don't do the work and we let those things build up either in ourself or in our relationship, like, that's on us. And if I don't communicate, one thing I love that I learned in therapy and a lot in our house is we have a do-over. I'll say something and I'm like, oh my gosh, can I try again? And he's like, yeah. We have learned, right? It's all grace. It's all grace. And that gets easier over time, but it takes work.
Well, it's lunchtime. But they're going to eat lunch with us, right? You're staying for lunch? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you have more work to do. But grab them because...
Come to my round table.
Yes, come to Trey's round table. But during lunch, grab them, ask questions. They're very wise. Please get the book. It's in the back. Thank you for being here. Thanks for being here.